Aloha and welcome to the Kauai Death Cafe. We're here on a soulful Sunday. How's everybody doing? I'm Jenna and I'm in studio with Susan, and we have my friend and special guest, Melanie LeMay. She's a death doula, and we're going to talk about what that means to be a death doula. A lot of people have it boiled down to being a very simple task, and it's a pretty big one that encompasses lots of different things. And those of us that do doula work do it differently. So mm-hmm. I'm a doula, and Melanie is a death doula.
And I did a training.
Yep. That makes you one too.
It makes me sort of one.
She shelters death for sure. Mm-hmm. We're going to do a quick shout out though to say happy birthday to Susan. Yesterday was her birthday.
80 years old.
Ochenta.
Wonderful.
Old.
You made it.
Somewhere. Now the next road.
Yeah, well, we'll see how that goes. I think on our next show, if we can finagle it, you may be able to call in, but Susan's going to take a little far-flung trip to see her son, and so we might
in
have
Singapore.
Her calling in from Singapore.
Yeah, if we can. Jenna wants me to go check out all the cemeteries
and mortuaries.
And mortuaries. That'll be my project in Singapore.
You'll be walking the baby around in a stroller, and they'll be like, "Where'd you go?" You'll get in trouble cemetery. The first time. Anyway, well, thank you for joining us, Mel. My
pleasure.
I thought maybe we might just start by talking about how we got into doing doula work, because mm-hmm. for me, I didn't just get hit in the head and start acting this way. I realized that it's been something that I've been dealing and doing with, you know, since I was a child.
Mm-hmm.
So I find that all really interesting, and you have a pretty interesting story.
Yeah.
So
I like to say also that I'm an end of life guide, because some people don't know what a doula is.
Right.
So just using that different language.
Mm-hmm.
You want me to tell where I started?
Yeah, I think so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, here we go. I started when I saw my first corpse. I was 7 years old. And that is because I lived in a funeral home. My mom was working there, and I was just like, that was part of my life.
Wow.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember her telling my sister and I, like, not to be afraid. There was nothing to be afraid of. And so I didn't. And I became fascinated, at the contrary, and curious.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so I saw a bunch of weird things happening, to say the least, but also grief and, you know, different traditions, what yeah. they do in different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of flowers, incense, and makeup. <You know? laughs> But then if I fast forward, because I never thought that I would be in that field, you know, in my future, if you ask me, you know, when I was young. I'm a certified massage therapist, so that's, you know, my main thing for 25 years. Yeah, you too. And so, but you know, as being part of caring for people, I had clients that just came to me, and after a session, were able to release some grief that was stuck. That mm-hmm. let's say for months, you know, they took care of their parent that eventually died, and then they were just holding it without knowing.
Right.
And you know, that I remember that person thanking me for allowing her to just be back in her body, and she cried and cried and cried, and she like felt, you know, good about that.
Mm-hmm.
And it started like planting a seed in me that, wow, I think there's something there for me, you know, of working around anything around death and dying, you know, from mm-hmm. from like grief to burials.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know, I remember being fascinated and hanging out in cemeteries. That was like my fun thing to do.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, but Susan, when we first started doing the show, my friend Allison said, "Oh, you've got to meet this girl. She does home funerals." And this was who she was telling me to call.
Wow.
Yeah, that was me.
Yeah, it was Mel. So my other question, though, Mel, is so at that point, is that when you started volunteering for hospice to do some massage?
I felt like I had, it's more than a calling, right? They say it's not even a calling. It's not something that you wake up and say, oh, I think it's a good idea to just like go and be with people who are dying.
Right.
But it's something bigger than that. Mm-hmm. Something almost like ineffable, something that's hard to explain.
Yeah.
But it's just there.
Because you found yourself doing it all of a sudden.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Well, you know, I was there on the side with my grandma when she died. I was actually massaging her and then, you know, saw it happening. And then I witnessed, like I said, a lot, but even, you know, with my family. Mm-hmm. And I became a hospice volunteer. I was like, oh my gosh, whenever I heard that was a thing, I'm like, that's it. I'm going. I'm going to do the training, whatever it takes. And, you know, so I called here at you know, hospice, and I did the training, and it's been a blessing. And after that, I took a death doula training as well, and that was like an eye opening, like, wow.
We have a 4-year old in
studio. We have my daughter here with me, so there's a little distraction.
Got a range.
Yeah.
Well, for me, so 2 weeks ago, I was driving down the street and I was recalling this memory from being a child. And I was with my dad and we were with these people from his church and we were at somebody's house and their daughter had died.
Mm-hmm.
And I remembered, I can't remember the situation very clearly. So I called him to ask him what happened that day. And what he regurgitated to me was pretty much what I remembered, all except for a couple of things. So these people were praying over this girl who had died. The coroner had already left. The ambulance had gone, and we were waiting for the mortuary to show up. And in that hour time gap, all these people were praying over her, like, in a way that I'd never seen anybody pray, you know, and they're like laying hands and they're praying in tongues and then just going crazy, you know. And about 10 minutes into it, she woke up and she said something. And she said, I'm okay, I'm okay, I'm okay. And then she passed out again. And then she woke back up, like, I don't know, probably about 10 minutes later. And she said, Dad, I'm with Jesus. And that was the part that I forgot that my dad told me that she said,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then she said, do you want to see him? And then she died. Then the mortuary came, zipped her up and took her away, you know, and
wow.
I carried that around with me for a long time. And
what was your age?
He said I was 12.
Okay.
So what I realized the other day was that what I had seen was a miracle, you know. I saw these people use their energy to make something completely crazy happen, you know? And since then, I haven't sought out situations like this. I'm in this situation, you know? So another time, one of his friends came to Texas and she knew she had cancer really, really bad and she knew she was gonna die. But her doctors were like, don't, you know, you've got to stay here and die. And so instead she got on the plane and went to Texas and she wanted to go to the Western Wear store and buy a cowboy outfit. And she made my dad take her to do this, you know. And then literally 3 days later, she's so sick, she's got to be in the hospital. And we were unaware of her condition, you know. And so then when we get there and we find out that she's in end stages of life, my dad has been, like, he was having a series of heart attacks and having all of these problems himself. And then, boom, she shows up and he has to care for her. And then something happened and somebody gave him some Dallas Cowboy tickets, right? And so he's like, man, the Cowboys are playing, you know? And he's got to go to this game. And can I stay there with Grace and be there with her, you know? And so, of course, Grace dies while I'm there with her, you know? And She woke up from the middle of her deep, deep sleep and just said, I've been holding the hand of God.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And then she got really agitated and wanted to get out of the bed, which she hadn't been out of bed in 3 days, you know, and I helped her use the restroom, and then I helped get her back into bed, and then I start trying to frantically call her son because she's awake, you know, and then she died.
Oh.
You know, and so I was put in these little scenarios all the time. That's just two, you know, but...
But you know what those are, right?
What?
Like the end of life hallucination or visions.
Oh, yeah.
That happens, like, it can happen towards the last moments, last minutes, or last weeks. Mm-hmm. It can go up to months.
Yeah.
But so mostly...
You call them hallucinations?
Well, like, bedside visions, it's another term for it. Because, yeah, they thought that at some point they were hallucinating, either from the meds or just from, you know, like just the illness.
Act of dying.
But
yeah.
It is not actually hallucinations. It's like visions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think the veil, I've been explained that the veil gets really thin, you know, during that time. And it's almost, we were having that conversation, Susan and I, earlier this week about how Benjamin Button, how you,
right.
As you get older, you almost seem to travel back to, you know, being really young and being
youthful.
And then
being back in diapers.
And then being back in diapers. But children, the veil is thin for children. Children can see things that adults can't see sometimes, you know, because of that innocence. So
my son said when he was a little boy, he said, how did you know that? He said something amazing. And he said, well, it just came from God.
You're like, okay.
I mean, yeah, perfectly.
Of course it did.
And the night my mother died, I was in the room with her, and I didn't know she was going to be dying that day, but that night, that whole night, my grandma was there, my aunt, everybody I knew who was dead was appearing in some, you know, not in a hokey way. It's just like, how did that get in my dream?
Right.
You know, it was just, well, that was interesting. And then the next day she passed, so.
Wow.
I thought of the veil, what they call the veil, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The very thin veil.
So, I think it brings comfort to most people, too.
Yeah.
To see their deceased loved ones or there's some but saints or, you know, like you're saying, that little girl that saw Jesus.
And I think that, too, what you another thing that I kind of was talking to a friend about who talked to somebody else recently who had a near-death experience is that we're using the language that we know, right?
Which is inadequate.
It's inadequate, you know. And Jesus being our central deity as Christians in the United States, of course, that's what you're going to see. But I think that sometimes people discount those stories because of the language that we're using. And referring to it as something like, I saw the divine or something, sounds woo-woo too.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's the language gets in the way.
Even dementia, that when we were having that conversation about Benjamin Bottoms, and I keep looking at the people who are dementia, and it's like, well, they're just getting to be babies again. What other word besides, I mean, it's just like we have to keep upping our language and our descriptions for things. Just like that person yesterday told me that we're in a assimilation.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And that could be another word for God in a technical age that we're in right now. This is a simulation.
Sure.
So it's, the words.
That's very Matrix-y.
Yeah. Yeah,
right. Well, yeah, and who knows, right?
I
just came back from the unknown. So.
For sure.
For sure.
I mean, so you start massaging for hospice.
Uh-huh.
And it's all of this work is before you. So what happened next?
Oh, well, you know, unfortunately, a hospice cut the volunteers coming during COVID.
Oh, yeah.
It's saddened me so much because it's like at a time where it's the most needed. I had an afternoon of grief myself, like a collective grief, where I was thinking during COVID of all the people who died alone or away from their loved ones and from the loved ones that couldn't be with, you know, their person dying.
Yeah.
And I was just like, whoa. So that was intense. And then since I became a mom, well, that changed my priorities.
Oh, of
so
course.
Volunteering was put on the back burner for a little bit. And but it was always like simmering, and it still is. And I just actually founded a nonprofit organization called Death Dream. And there's a beautiful mission, and it's like supporting families and people into the end of life, from advanced care directive support to, you know, grief support to educating mm-hmm. about alternatives when it comes to burials mm-hmm. Or, you know, funerals mm-hmm. and also reminding people that there's some beautiful rituals that can be done with our loved ones. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, I know exactly, I want to be cremated, I want my ashes to be spread this, there, or that. But there's this piece missing, I find, that when the person dies, to slow it down and to take a moment to be with your loved one who died.
Right.
And there's some, you know, as a death doula or end of life guide, you know, it's like I want to clearly invite people to think of that.
Yeah.
As, you know, a way, I always say, like, you know, in the past many years now, homeschool has been back, you know, home births also. And I'm all about, like, why not home death, you know, mm-hmm. more so. There's some statistics out there that, you know, there's a high percentage, like, of people who wants to die at home and, yeah. like, ended up at the hospital. Yeah. Dying and having seen people that were kind of strangers with maybe broken ribs and intubing, and because they haven't prepared, you know, whenever, like before it's too late, they haven't done their advanced care directive or living will. So
well,
the importance of that.
It's also like the denial of death is a huge factor.
Yeah.
You don't want to talk about it because
you don't.
It might happen.
Well, yeah. And then it leads to all of these things that in your heart you knew you didn't want happening, right? Like you go to see your friend on life support and you go, I never want to be hooked up to a machine. Mm-hmm. But you say it to yourself rather right. than look over at your husband and go, nah, or whatever, you know? And So Mel's focus with Dream Death is, or Death Dream, I always reverse it, with Death Dream is to have that sort of conversation with your family, because these are people, this would be for people that are acknowledging the fact that they're dying, you know, and it takes a minute to get to that point, you know?
Yeah.
And sometimes we've exhausted a lot of energy in getting to that point. And, you know, and it's really nice to have a person like you that understands what's going to go on next and how that can happen and how to support the family, not just the person going through it, because mm-hmm. it encompasses your whole, you know, your whole family.
Oh, yeah.
And everybody around you.
Absolutely.
And you're part of a trend that's yes. happening right now, because
yes.
I attribute it to us baby boomers who mm-hmm. never we never followed the rules, and we changed childbirth and menopause mm-hmm. and now we're all dying, so now we're saying, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. We watched that wasn't, didn't look like fun, you know, the funeral home and the casket and the makeup.
I have this quote that I like that was written in this book, and it was from a doula, and she said, at least there are no pretenses. I have a kind of reward knowing that I release them into their deaths while everyone else wants to keep them alive. Try to keep her as long as you can, you know. Mm. And so it's a person who shelters someone in the act of acknowledging that this is happening, you know?
So I don't understand, they're saying to try to keep them alive, or they're,
well,
keep them as long as you can.
The last thing she said was try to keep her as long as you can, you know, because you're acknowledging the person, you know? It's it's always...
But keeping them alive as long as you can?
No, so just keeping her as long as you can.
Keeping, like, once she died, keeping the body?
No, I think just the remembrance of her.
In spirit.
Yeah, because...
Because I have friends who are trying to keep their mother alive.
No, no.
At all cost, and the poor thing.
That's what she was sort of saying, is she feels a reward knowing that she releases people into their deaths.
Okay.
While everyone else wants to keep them alive.
Oh, everyone else, yeah. Like I said, that, Susan. Mm-hmm.
You know, and so the, in this woman's story, she was talking about how she's relieved knowing what she's there to do, you know?
And yeah,
now
I get it.
There to hold that space for these people. That's her job, you know? And it's a huge job, because there's no... It's great, you can take all these doula courses and you can do all of this stuff, but until you get into the thick of it, you know, everything is different. Everybody's interests and requests and, you know, is different.
It's one of a kind, everyone, you know.
Like a birth.
Exactly, yeah. I was going to just say that. And same with planning, right? Like, I planned my birth. It's the care and the needs and the wishes are so similar. Like, for example, do you want to do it at home? Do you want to do it at the hospital? Do you want to have meds? Do you want to have, like, natural? Mm-hmm. Do you want to think of these applies for birth and death.
Absolutely.
And then the one thing I'd like to add to this is create, like, I planned mine with all the possibilities that my desires were, with and no expectations. Because it's going to be how it's going to be.
Yeah, you don't know.
And the, you know, my daughter's soul knew, right? She knew how to come and when to come. And I believe that our soul knows when to leave as well.
Mm-hmm.
Consciousness, or, yeah, you know, whatever we want to call it.
Or the expiration date.
The expiration date. We're reincarnating, we're incarnating and then excarnate. You know, you're excarnate.
Oh man.
Jenna, how did you get into doing this work?
So for me, it sort of just felt like, again, it was just in front of me all the time. I was already doing the work, you know? And I went from, you know, of course, when we're young and we're having babies, I had babies 26 years ago. So I had a 26-year-old, and then I got back into the modality of it again. Or I had a baby 26 years ago, and then I have a 14-year-old too. And so I'm the person that everybody calls to ask how to nurse, and what's this rash, and why is the baby have gas, and what do I do? And, you know, I had a home birth too. I had a hospital birth as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think that at 46 years old, we're not having babies anymore. And so it's sort of switched now, because everybody's gotten their He's diagnosis.
Well, wait a minute. I had mine at 45.
Oh, yeah.
See, that wasn't 46.
No. Yeah, it was not 46.
It's true. We can have babies way later.
Yeah. I mean, and we're living way longer, you know? I mean, just technology catching up with us and leaving us in the dust and everything in between. Mm-hmm. But I thought that there was something really depressed about myself, or something wrong with me, that I was going and dwelling in these situations sometimes. And then I thought, oh, now there's something psychologically wrong with me, and I'm just trying to get so-and-so to recognize me and see me, kind of thing, you know. And I really had to check myself and understand what was I doing around these things, you know. And it took a lot of thinking. So when I got into high school, I was 15 years old. I was in ninth grade, and I would walk from the high school to the old folks' home and play dominoes with old people and paint their nails and read them the newspaper. Like,
was kind of you.
Yeah. And then I would do that for a few hours, and then I was a dishwasher at a steakhouse, and so then I could walk from the nursing home to the steakhouse and wash dishes until 11 p.m.
Wow.
And so I had to kill a couple of hours in the middle of there. I could have been like riding around with my friends or doing anything, and that's what I was doing instead, you know. And so the whole cliche of a calling, you know, I don't think it's a calling. I think it's like I finally recognized what this pattern was, you know, and then started to explore it a little bit more deeply.
And it showed up in your life. I mean, it wasn't like you went out looking for it. It just,
no,
it happened.
It showed up in my life. 5 years ago, I separated from my husband and I moved to the other side of the island, and I moved behind the mortuary. Like, it's the only commercial business within a mile radius of my house, you know.
And now you work there.
It's within walking distance, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So
when it's in alignment, you know, like, it comes to you.
Well,
when
and it was...
When you're vibrating the...
You can't even
Well, what
help
was
it.
Interesting about that alignment, too, though, was I knew that the mortuary was there, but a friend of mine's daughter lost a baby. And they were highly distraught over it. And she told me that this person was able to get the baby from the mortuary at the hospital. And I didn't understand at the time. So she gave me the guy's number, yeah? And I just call him. And he's like, this is the weirdest phone call I've ever gotten, because I explained to him the situation and why I'm calling, you know? And I tell him, I'm like, I think I might be interested in doing home funerals, and I was just kind of wondering what kind of license you have, you know? He's like, what? So
amazing.
He gives me this address, and he says, if you want to know, you're going to meet me here at 8 o'clock tomorrow. And I said, okay. And he's just real short, like, on the phone, like, you know, I don't have time for this. I'm like, okay. So I show up at this address at 8 in the morning, and I MapQuest myself there, and it's the mortuary 4 blocks from my house. And so that's how I got into working in there. And I had been a volunteer at hospice before that, and then I had been sitting bedside with people for a number of years before that, so just as a caretaker.
Yep.
You know, and then it's all over my astrological chart too, so there you go.
Oh yeah, the house of death.
The house of death is
same with me.
I've got a full stellium in there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But it's true. It's not like when you said, you know, am I crazy? Why am I thinking this all the time? Because I've been notorious about talking about death from forever. My friends just laugh at me because of it, and it's like, how did I get here? I'm so embarrassed.
Yeah.
Well, why is this my favorite subject?
In your bathroom at your house, you have...
Oh, that joke?
Yeah, but it's from... You had a eulogy party or something?
I did. My friend... It was actually 15 years ago. My friend threw me a eulogy party, because we used to laugh and say, wow, you don't have your eulogies till you're dead and you never get to hear them. And so she surprised me.
With the eulogy
down at
party.
The beach, and she invited all these people, and there was a cake that said rest in peace, and there were all of these poems and songs and
eulogy.
A lot of laughing.
You.
And
I
it was
that.
My eulogy. It was like, it was so much fun.
It's like a living funeral.
Yeah, like, hey, I don't want to wait till I die to hear what everybody says.
No.
Of course, now, one of my friends yesterday brought over what she wrote to me at that eulogy party.
Oh, wow.
And it was pretty much the same as who I am now, but it's very different, too. So it's sort of like if I had another eulogy party, it wouldn't, it would be so
it
different.
It would be different.
But, yeah, that was a... Why wait till you're dead when you...
Well, I just threw that in there because I knew it was like from your 65th birthday or something.
Yeah.
And that was 15 years ago. So you've been on this track for a minute.
Yeah.
Proof.
Embarrassingly so.
No, I think everybody appreciates it, you know?
Well, the older we get, but it wasn't in my 40s. Well, like, you know, when you're talking about death.
I know.
And people are
People
going,
don't want to have dinner with me.
We don't want to talk about that.
They don't have dinner with me.
You know, I think like there's two types of people. Like when I mention I'm an end-of-life guide, or, you know, this is what I'm up to, it's either they crack a joke and walk away, or, you know, avoid it, or they're so curious and want to hear more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my That was my favorite thing. That's my line. If a guy hits on me out somewhere and I'm alone, you know,
you tell him you work for the mortuary.
I work at the mortuary, and they just put their head down and go the other direction. It works pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one. It's a good opening conversation.
Yeah. Well, let's take a break for a minute. We're here at the Death Cafe, and we've got my friend Mel here, and she's the founder of the nonprofit Death Dream. And we're going to cut to a break, and we'll be back in a moment. Thanks for joining us.
All right.
Burning. Yeah. Hi, welcome back to the Kauai Death Cafe. We're in studio with Susan and my friend Mel, who is a end-of-life guide, or also referred to as a doula. We were just looking up the definition of doula and where it comes from in language, trying to sort of...
It's from Greek.
It's Greek.
The word Greek means female servant or woman who serves.
Mm.
Yeah.
Are
but
you a
it was revived in the
70s.
Guys? Yeah. Yeah. And then a birth doula or death doula. Yeah. Accompanies individuals and families through the dying process.
Mm. Okay, now we want to learn about what Mel does specifically with her nonprofit. So do you want to...
I actually have your mission statement, and I'm going to read it.
Right on.
We compassionately support individuals and family through the sacred journey of end of life, death care, grief, and rituals. To honor a soulful body and give back to Mother Earth, we offer guidance and resources that help plan and carry out meaningful alternative end of life choices. We provide and develop advanced care, death doula, ritual and grief support services, education for eco-friendly burials and death positive movement, a death-positive community by facilitating conversations and gatherings. Mel throws one hell of a dinner party, by the way.
Oh,
she,
yeah.
She does a death over dinner sometimes. Recently, she's been doing death over drafts.
Death that over drafts.
Includes beer.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, drafts. brewing conversations about end of life.
Oh, so they're like parties where you talk about it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and there's different formats where we can open it like just like freestyle a little bit, like storytelling. and there's prompts that I like to choose depending who the guests are and, you know, why they're interested into attending. And there's also a beautiful tool. I have a lot of resources, but... This woman created a deck of cards with questions with multiple choices answers, and it just like breaks the ice for conversations, you know.
So openers. Even like a family could say, okay, we want to get together,
yes,
and talk about this.
Absolutely.
As a family.
Yeah,
that would be very cool.
It's eye-opening, and it's like, yeah. And you know, it can sound like talking about death or your own or your from your loved ones can be heavy. But that's a way to actually keep it light. Mm-hmm. And
that's what this show is about.
Yeah.
It's, like
yeah. It's very informative. Yeah. And I mean, I'm having fun right now. It's like, it's not heavy or boring.
No, it's the old narrative that is all dark and heavy and boring.
Yeah.
It's like, we have to change. I feel like it'd be positive to change the narrative because it's inevitable.
Yes.
And we don't even know if it's bad. We don't even know what it's really happening.
Yeah,
so
it's
bad.
That's
the grief
whole topic.
Is bad.
Yeah.
The grief is sad. We somehow working with that, but
yeah,
talking about it.
Well, and like grief. You were saying, there's a movement right now.
Right.
And I'm just glad to be part of that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like people are opening more to the idea of like just talking about it and just you know, lining up your business before you die, mm-hmm, so that your loved ones can grief in peace.
Yeah.
You know?
And that was something else I was going to touch on is a lot of times when an end of life guide comes in, she's helping the family discuss their anticipatory grief that's going to come, you know, and then allowing people to understand because until something really major like this hits you, and a loved one is dying, and then they die, you didn't really realize up until that point that everything in life was grief. So a lot of things happen and a lot of feelings surge in that have to be sorted out. And, you know, you can employ a psychologist for $250 an hour to listen to you talk about grief, but you can also learn just a little bit while you're going through the process that will really help. And I know that for me as a doula, when I doula with people, you know, I have to recognize and identify their grief and say, hey, it's completely okay for you to be really pissed off right now. Mm-hmm. Tell me how pissed off you are, you know, as I'm pissed off too.
Yeah.
You know, or whatever.
Yeah. I know I say grief is not linear.
No.
And it can be chaotic, and it shows up also at any time. Mm-hmm. It's not like, okay, I'm going to grieve now and then I'll move on.
Then I'll be done, yeah.
You know, it's more like I'm going to live my life building around the grief and the void and the love that doesn't have any place to go.
And like you said, not quite in that way, but you know, we live with grief all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and so many subtle ways.
Yeah.
Just all the losses, mm-hmm. the tiny little losses.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That we grieve.
That's, again, what the Tibetan Book of the Dead wants you to do, with the tiny little losses. We were talking about Tibetan Book of the Dead earlier today, but that was part of the Bardo practice, is all of these little losses stacking up on top of each other as practice for the ultimate.
That's what Stephen Levine said ages ago. He said that all of, when you lose your animal, when you lose different little things, he referred to it as like building the muscle.
Yeah.
That's the little weights that you lift that build the muscle, so when the big grief comes, you have the... I tried it with my son. I've been talking to my son about, because I lost my parent and I wanted him to be prepared, and so I've talked to him a lot about it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And at one point, yeah, he said, Mom, it's not going to help. When the time comes, you know, it's like, I thought I was doing it so it would be less hard for him, and I think it will be, but at one moment he said, you know, it's not going to help. I'm still going to deeply grieve.
Yeah.
So do what you want, but it's there.
And there's so many ways now that to grieve. I mean, always. We just like also lost the art, I feel like, because we isolate, you know, we live in a isolated world versus, in you know, before in you wrote grief in communities in the village. It was supported.
Right.
And so now it's like you're by yourself and not sure if that the way you feel it's the way that you're supposed to feel. It's all right. It's not. Yeah.
There was a culture I heard about that for a full year after you lose a loved one, you are allowed to be crazy. You're allowed to cry. You're allowed to moan in the village. You're allowed to act however you want to act, however you feel, because you're grieving. And, you know, to have that permission it would be a growth for us Westerners.
Yeah, there's a beautiful book, The Smell of Rain on Dust, Grief and Praise by Martin Pescherelle.
Oh.
It reminds me of that. I have the book right here.
Right.
And in New Zealand, I saw recently that they do grief rave.
Oh.
You go dance your grief away.
Where? Yeah.
In New Zealand.
Oh, of course.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
Yeah, they wait.
Or they do haka for the...
Yeah.
Yeah, for like some funeral. Very touching.
Yeah, that's a very, very cool ritual.
There's so much. I have another idea I think would be useful, to use the elements, you know, using nature to grief.
I
like
that.
Fire, write a letter, burn it, go to a waterfall and just like, you can, you know, cry and scream, or even underwater, like screaming underwater.
Yeah.
And, you know, just like hiking in silence as well.
We learned when we had a kumu on the air that the Hawaiians actually have a word for going into the water like that to release stuff. I don't know what the word is because I forgot.
But it was cool.
Yeah.
Sounds great. Yeah.
Very cool. Yeah. Right now, I'm with one of my hospice patients. I'm working on a legacy project. And she was a photographer. And she has all of these beautiful old pictures of the island. And so we've been looking through her photographs. And that's one of the cooler kind of legacy projects that I've been involved in. And hopefully there's enough stuff there that we can get it to the Historical Society and sort of leave this, you know, leave this little legacy of hers behind. She's really excited about it. She went from not feeling well at all to, you know, me getting all these photos out and her kind of taking this walk down memory lane. And it really brought a lot of joy to her to just have this old box of photos on her stomach while she's laying in bed going, hey, I remember that, and I can't believe I was ever that skinny, and you know, just all of these things, you know.
Yeah, that's another role of the doula, like helping creating that legacy. I just offered a gift to a dear friend of mine here on Kauai to write this story. So there's some companies out there so he's going to get an email with a proper question about his life that he's going to write.
I have my son send that to me. There's one of them called Storyworth.
That's the one I used.
That's the one, yeah. They ask some really goofy questions, but you can change the
questions. You can change the questions.
But
you can
create your own.
And then at the end of the time, because it's going to be up to a year, they make a book, and then you have your kind of a autobiography.
I'm in the process of doing that right now.
I think it's cool, though, for like your grandson and stuff like that.
Well, that's what it's for,
exactly.
I mean, the legacy is mainly for the your
left behind,
people who want it. I mean, he's going to be curious about his, you know, where he came from. Yeah. I have lots of questions I wish I would have asked my grandma when she was around.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's become popular, that sort of a
some people, I've had other people that they don't want to have anything to do with it either and were offended that I asked, you know.
Yeah.
I had a client who's a writer, and I said, hey, do you want to... I brought a little book in there, and I said, hey, do you want to write some things? No! Never writing again. You know? So I'm like, okay.
I can relate to that, too.
Plenty of writing. Right. I go, do you want to just say them, and I'll write them? No!
So. And the story worth thing, you get to just... You don't have to write it. You get to. You can talk it, too.
Oh, wow.
And put pictures in.
That makes it
in
very
the process
easy.
Of... learning how to put pictures in.
Storyworth. Wow.
Well, for those that are interested, I have a lot of resources, and I put together a document that I find like really useful and beautiful for from Advanced Care Directive to your choices and conscious dying wishes. And the answers are already like pre-written, so it just makes you reflect, and you just like check if you want. And so I want to invite people out there, if they're interested, I have it that I can mail it out, or I can send it virtually.
Great. And, what's your Instagram handle?
Oh yeah, it's deathdream1111.
Okay.
Yeah,
what's
that's
the
a
1111?
Facebook too.
What is the significance?
Well, honestly, Death Dream was already taken.
Oh, okay.
And so I chose 1111 because it's like, it's known for being a portal, you know, to open up.
Auspicious time.
Yeah, exactly. They can, you know, they can find also the donation platform in the bio and the link and get, you know, DM me on there to get the document, or to have a dinner party, or to have an event, to just discuss it, you know, talk about it.
You like to cook?
I love to cook. Yeah,
cool.
I love to cook. Yeah,
let's have a party.
I know.
Let's do it.
It's fun. Fall is coming up. We could have a pretty cool.
Let's wait till winter. The real
death
time.
Yeah,
the dark winter.
October's coming. I have a friend. We're having a prayer ceremony for her actually on the 16th of September, and that's going to be at the Calvary Church. So if you know Gabriella Deleuze, please join us on the 16th. We're just going to be singing some songs and just giving her some good vibes. So anybody who can come and do that, it's on a Tuesday, but it should be a fairly uplifting event for everybody, so that would be pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And do you have anything coming up?
No? I'm looking into hosting some in the community centers.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, maybe one in Kapa'a.
Mm-hmm.
3 to 5, but the date isn't set yet. But yeah. Stay tuned, and if you want to hear more about it, on Death Dream 1111, and I always post it on the public events.
And I share on my Kauai Death Cafe Instagram as well. And then Melanie and I met a couple of times, and we did a live Death Cafe.
Yep.
Like what we're doing here. And so we were trying to sort of establish doing something once a month and having people live in person. So it's always a cool place to go. Something always comes out of it. There's always really neat people there.
So much value and mm-hmm. connection. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad that we get to meet, you and I. I mean, we go way back, but, you know, not about death and dying.
We didn't know we had this affinity.
Now
this.
We know. Mm-hmm. I love it.
Another friend of ours from the hospice group that's a mutual friend of ours is who brought us together. And so it was very much like Susan and I. And they're like, you got to meet this other girl who talks your kind of...
Right.
All day. Yeah. And that's one thing too. I didn't realize, like, for me, talking about it is so easy.
Yeah.
And I like to hold that space, right, for people to talk about it. And... So I didn't realize like that this is a gift. Like I thought like everybody is at ease with it and
right.
you know, everybody is okay with, you know, when somebody dies, talking about that person and so on. But no. So just to, I love hearing the stories of people. Every time also I say, and the people are open mm-hmm. when I say what I do, they all have a story. They're like, oh, yeah. I had such experience when my mom died, or, you know, or this or that. And I just love hearing
they
those stories.
They can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. They don't talk about it enough, I feel like. So just to have that space to be heard is great.
Yeah. I thought that happens to me a lot, too.
Mm-hmm.
People, I have friends who say, oh, that's depressing. I don't want to talk about it. Sorry.
You're like, yeah. I've definitely had to learn how to edit my inklings sometimes.
Know who you're talking to.
And not
to.
Go there.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you know with me you can bring it on.
I know. It's really nice to have other friends with the same modalities, that's for sure. You know.
Do you want to talk about your licensing?
Oh,
request or
yeah, like, so something has kind of come up for me, and I am looking for a commercial boat permit. If anybody knows where to get one, I have the opportunity to perhaps to start doing some sea burials. So that would be a full body burial out to sea.
Some people are going to be like, what? What is she talking about?
Yeah,
what
so is that? It is a method of disposition, as we learned in our show a couple of shows ago. So in order to receive a death certificate, you have to be disposed. And sea burial is one of them. And so it would look a lot like wrapping you in a shroud and preparing you after whatever type of viewing your family may have, and then driving you 5 miles out and having a sea ceremony. So,
you know, with flowers and lace and everything wrapped in like organic so that it's like super eco-friendly.
Yep, and you can bring your, you know, your pastor, your priest, your kumu, whoever you like with you, or we can do that blessing before we even leave the shore. And then also I've been scattering a pretty large amount of, well, I think I've done 25 cremain scattering ashes out to sea in the last like year. And so I started really getting into how amazingly beautiful that is. When we put cremained ashes into the water, it just makes the most beautiful figure. And in my mind, it's really neat. It's very elemental, because we're going from returning you to the air through the process of fire, and then returning you to the water, you know, just all the elements are there, and to the land ultimately as you settle to the bottom. And then you come back as rain. I think it's really exciting.
Come back as rain.
I think it's really exciting.
Well, so you need a license.
Yeah, so I'm looking for a commercial license, and it's the same one that like a guy uses to take out people on a fishing charter. But the you know what I would be using it for was to charter like that and to do those ceremonies for people. So
it's going to happen.
I'm already doing it. I have a boat, but it's just small. I can only take two people with me.
Yeah, no parties on the boat.
And in all honesty, I've only probably taken one group of people. People usually just give me the cremains to go and do. I make a video, drop them the coordinates, send it all back. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so if anybody
it's a good
knows,
idea.
Hook it up. Give me a call. Kauai Death Cafe @gmail.com or kauaideathcafe.com or Kauai Death Cafe, my Instagram. Yeah, that's my website.
Or the new website, what is that?
KauaiDeathCafe.com.
The boat one?
No. Oh,
the ocean.
I forgot.
Ocean.
I actually have a website for my ocean burials. It's called HawaiianOceanBurial.com. HawaiiOceanBurial.com.
There you go.
Yay.
So, there's so much more that we can talk about because when you talk about, you know, the ashes spread and.
Mm-hmm. There's everything.
Mushroom shroud. Let the mycelium eat the body
everything.
Up. Let them do their thing.
Well, we've killed an hour, guys.